I'm really excited to be here. I always love being able to present more of God's Word. I thank the elders for another opportunity to preach. And the topic of tonight's lesson is going to be on something that I've actually been thinking about and studying about for the last month or month and a half. And it all started when a friend of mine on Facebook stated that he believed that women should only wear dresses. And he pointed to a couple different passages and said, see, from this passage in Deuteronomy, it says that women shall not wear what pertains to a man. And then he pointed to another verse in 1 Timothy that pointed out that Paul says that women should only wear long dresses. So with the most unbiased thinking, I don't think it's very wise to just look at this topic, because I'd heard about it before, but I hadn't really thought about it or come to an opinion about it. So as I thought about it more and more, I thought, I should really have an opinion about this, because it's in the Bible. And I think it would be very foolish to look at a topic that some people have different viewpoints about and not have some kind of opinion about it. So I picked out this verse. It's from Ephesians. It says, therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. So that is going to be my goal tonight. I am not going to tell you exactly what the Bible says, although I hope from the verse that we're going to look at, that's you will come to that conclusion. But I'm just going to look at both sides of the arguments, for and what I believe are against, and you can come to your own conclusion. So first, let's look at those arguments that they believe why women should only wear dresses all the time. Now, I'd like to clarify, this is not talking about just worship services, but all the time, every single day, all hours of the day. They believe women should only wear dresses all the time, that they cannot wear pants. So these are the following arguments. One, women cannot wear man's apparel. And they say that because of a verse in Deuteronomy. Let's look at that verse and read it. It's Deuteronomy 22, verse 5. A woman shall not wear anything that pertains to a man, nor shall a man put on a woman's garment, for all who do so are an abomination to the Lord your God. They take this verse and say, women shall not wear what pertains to a man. So, in order to create that distinction, women must only wear dresses, because men wear pants, not women. They also say that the word abomination in that verse still applies today, because the word abomination, in other references that's used in the Bible, are the most detestable sins that God looks upon and are repeated again in the New Testament. And then they also say that it's not part of the old law, mostly because of that, again, that word abomination. The second argument they state is that pants are man's apparels, man's apparel, and that the Bible uses the word breeches to talk about pants. It doesn't exclusively say the word pants, but it says breeches, and they say they're basically the same thing. So because men wear breeches in the Bible, women should not wear them. The third argument is that there is little to no distinction between man's and woman's pants. And since that verse in Deuteronomy says that women shall not wear what pertains to man, nor shall man pertain what women wear, they say that women should not wear these because there's almost no distinction between the two. And in that verse, it implies that there must be some kind of distinction. And then the fourth point says it comes from a verse in 1 Timothy. So let's turn to that one and read it. 1 Timothy 2, verse 9. In like manner also, that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair, or gold, or pearls, or costly clothing, which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. Now you might be saying, where does it say in that verse that women are to wear long dresses? It stems from this word katastole. That's the word that's used in place of apparel in the Greek. So this word katastole, they say, translates into long flowing dress. Thus, Paul says that women must adorn themselves in modest, long, flowing dress. So they state that as a specific command to women that that is all that they can wear. So I thought these were very good arguments, but I thought, you know, I know a lot of people disagree with this, and I know lots of women wear pants. So what's the deal here? What's the different sides of these arguments? So I decided that I would look at both sides. So I listened to their arguments. I saw some websites, some verses that they use stating their opinion. And then I saw a couple other websites and read their analysis of their stand on the matter. So in conclusion, I have come to the personal conclusion that the Bible does not specifically tell women that they must only wear pants. And so I'll do so by refuting all four of these arguments. We'll look at all four of them and different aspects of those arguments. So the first argument, once again, was that women cannot wear men's apparel. So what's another possible translation of this verse, Deuteronomy 25? And a possible translation is that the word geber is used for man, and geber literally means man, strong man, or warrior. Then the word pertains, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, keli means weapon, armor, or instrument. So a possible translation could be, women shall not wear anything that is worn or used by warriors, nor shall a warrior put on a woman's garment. History would back this up. A lot of people have done a lot of research and seen some of the other cults, some of the secular paganism that was going on that day. They had a lot of rituals where women would dress up in men's armor, and then where men would actually wear women's clothing, women's dresses, or I should say long garments and skirts. So this is very possible. In Mr. Mike's lesson this morning, he talked about the story of Deborah and Sisera in jail. And they say when Jael used the tent peg to kill Sisera, the reason she did that was because she was not supposed to take up armor. So, I mean, my kind of reasoning is she was in a tent. There's a tent peg. Use the tent peg. But it's possible that could be. However, I would warn against using this translation because it's not what our Bible reads. Our Bible does read, woman shall not wear what pertains to a man, nor man pertain what pertains to a woman. So even though that could be possible, and there is some evidence to back that up, I would be wary in accepting that as the absolute definition of what that verse is. So let's look at a second argument against that. What does that word pertains really mean? Pertains, as defined by the Bible, means the exclusive property of. So pertains would mean, like, this shirt pertains to Matthew because it is mine. It's my property. This Bible pertains to Matthew because it's my property. That's what pertains means in the Bible. So let's look at a few verses just to clarify that. Leviticus 7, verse 20. But the person who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord while he is unclean, that person shall be cut off from his people. Now, this is the New King James Version. It uses the word belong. But in the King James Version, it does use the word pertains, which is the exact same word in that Deuteronomy verse. Another passage, Joshua 24, verse 33. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died. They buried him in a hill belonging to Phinehas, his son, which was given to him in the mountains of Ephraim. Again, this word belonging is pertains in the King James Bible. One more passage, Judges 6, verse 11. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abizrite, while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. And I think I'm just going to go ahead and read the verse from the King James Bible, just to be sure about that. And Gideon said, and there came an angel of the Lord, and under an oak, which was an Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash the Abizrite. Okay, so the word really is pertain. So in all three of these verses, that we see that the word pertains, meaning the exclusive property of. Webster's definition from 1828, it says, to belong, to be the property, right, or duty of. So even Webster Dictionary agrees with the Bible in this case. However, I'm just going to refer to them as the dresses-only believers, define this word pertains as typically worn by, rather than property of. So it says, women shall not wear what pertains to a man, what is typically worn by a man. Whereas we see that the actual definition means, women shall not wear what belongs to a man. So the verse could literally mean, woman shall not wear what pertains, belongs, exclusive property to a man. The third point is that word abomination. Does that word abomination, is it truly everlasting? Just because it's used in the Old Testament, does that last forever, like all these other commands that are in the Old Testament? The reason they say that is because something such as bestiality is considered an abomination. Homosexuality is referred to as an abomination. All these other sins that we would abhor and we think are just nasty are an abomination to God. And so they see all these other verses that are in the Old Law, in the Old Testament, they say these are an abomination to God. And see, look at the New Testament. They're still an abomination to God. God still hates all these laws. So this verse that says, woman shall not wear what pertains to a man, for it is an abomination to the Lord, say, this commandment still applies to us today because this word still applies. However, I find it interesting that verse, Deuteronomy 22, verse 5, is never repeated in the New Testament. So they can't say that every example of the word abomination in the Old Law is again repeated in the New Law, because this verse is never repeated. Couldn't we also consider that every sin that we commit against God is an abomination? Every time that we remove ourselves away from Him, that we get farther away from Him, is abominable to Him? He hates it when we sin against Him and when we travel farther and farther from God. So couldn't we say that every time the Bible talks about when we sin, we could place or we could put in that it is an abomination to God. It is absolutely detestable to Him. So that was my argument on the word abomination. And then they also say that Deuteronomy 22, verse 5, is not of the Old Law. I would argue that it is of the Old Law. And I'm going to do that by just reading a few of the verses that are around this particular command. I'll read verse 10 through verse 12. Ye shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Ye shall not wear a garment of different sorts, such as wool and linen mixed together. Ye shall make tassels on the four corners of the clothing with which you cover yourself. And now let's read verse 6, the verse exactly preceding verse 5. If a bird's nest happens to be before you along the way, in any tree or on the ground, with young ones or eggs, with the mother sitting on the young or on the eggs, you shall not take the mother with the young. You shall surely let the mother go and take the young for yourself, that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days. Also verse 4. You shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fall down along the road, and hide yourself from them. You shall surely help him lift them up again. And I am very thankful because I have never plowed my field with an ox and donkey together. The point of this really is going to show that these verses that are all around it are clearly not what are applicable to New Testament Christians. We don't see any kind of commands like this in the New Testament. These are clearly ceremonial laws. In fact, the heading of this section of Deuteronomy says miscellaneous laws. These are laws to the Mosaic people. So it's not right for you to take that one verse out of all of this and say, this verse must be applied to all the rest of us. Because that kind of everlasting moral law that we see that are in the Old Testament is not again repeated in the New Testament. It's within all these ceremonial laws that they would have had to perform back then. Moving on to the second argument, they say that pants are men's apparel, and thus women cannot wear pants. And they also say that even though the Bible doesn't say pants, it uses the word breeches, and breeches practically are pants. So, what are breeches, and who wore them? Let's look at this. Breeches were not just worn by men. They were specifically worn by priests. Exodus 28, verses 42 and 43. And ye shall make for them linen trousers to cover their nakedness. They shall reach from the waist to the thighs. They shall be on Aaron and on his sons when they come into the tabernacle of meeting, or when they come near the altar to minister in the holy place, that they do not incur iniquity and die. It shall be a statute forever to him and his descendants after him. And again, in the King James Bible, it uses the word breeches. Then again, in chapter 39, verses 27 and 28. And they made tunics, artistically woven of fine linen, for Aaron and his son, a turban of fine linen, exquisite hats of fine linen, short trousers of fine woven linen, and a sash of fine woven linen with blue, purple, and scarlet thread made by a weaver, as the Lord had commanded Moses. Leviticus 6, verse 10. And the priest shall put on his linen garment and his linen trousers, he shall put on his body, and take up the ashes of the burnt offering, which the fire had consumed on the altar, and he shall put them beside the altar. And then again in chapter 16, verse 4. He shall put on the holy linen tunic and the linen trousers on his body. He shall be girded with the linen sash, and with the linen turban he shall be attired. These are holy garments. Therefore he shall wash his body in the water and put them on. And then again in Ezekiel 44 it says the exact same thing. The priests wore these linen trousers or linen breeches. So I don't understand here how people can say that men wore breeches. Because, of course, the priests were men, but the priests were also priests. They had very specific attire that they were supposed to wear when they did all these sacrifices and ceremonies. So it's not exact correct reasoning to say that these men wear the trousers and the women cannot, because this is priests. This is very specific attire for just the priests. And it says no indication they were a generic garment for men, as I said before. Also, the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31 is said to have girded up her loins. And a lot of times they will say, girded up your loins pertains to trousers or breeches, and that was always with men. But here we see it that a woman is doing it in Proverbs 31. So they could say, see here, look, the normal people did also wear these trousers. But at the same time, they would also have to accept that the women did this as well. Also, breeches, as you'll see in that first verse that we read from Exodus 28, they only cover the thighs. They only went from the waist to the thighs. They were not pants, as we call it today, which go from the waist all the way down to the feet. These were a completely different garment. Also, you'll notice that it was told that they were to wear them underneath the outer garment. So, in essence, they were underwear. They weren't something that you wore on the outside as your pants, as your outer garment. This is something that you wore on the inside. And as we have seen, there is some evidence that women also wore these types of garments. This is probably my favorite. What else did the priests wear? If it is wrong for women to wear pants, then it must also be sinful for women to wear bonnets, girdles, and skirts. The reason being because priests wore bonnets, girdles, and skirts. So now I'm going to read from the King James Bible some of these verses. Once again, in Exodus 28, a couple verses back in verse 40. And for Aaron's sons, thou shalt make coats, and thou shalt make for them girdles, and bonnets shalt thou make for them, for glory and for beauty. Then in chapter 29, verse 9, and thou shalt gird them with girdles, Aaron and his sons, and put the bonnets on them, and the priest's office shall be theirs for a perpetual state, and thou shalt consecrate Aaron and his sons. 1 Samuel 18, chapter 4. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. Then, in verse 24, verse 5, and it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him, because he had cut off Saul's skirt. Then, again, in Deuteronomy 22, where that other verse is found, verse 30. A man shall not take his father's wife, nor discover his father's skirt. So we see here that both priests and men in general wore skirts, bonnets, and girdles. Nowadays, would we say that any of these types of garments are typically worn by men? I would never be caught dead in a bonnet out in public. Nor a skirt, for that matter. So, would it be sinful then for women to wear bonnets, girdles, and skirts? Because by the exact same reasoning, you would have to assume that it is sinful. Merriam-Webster's Dictionary of 1828 says that pants, typically were men's garments, bonnets were women's, skirts were women's, vest was man's, coat was man's, shirt was man's. At this time, it's saying that all these different types of garments are typically worn by these different genders. And so skirts and bonnets, they said, are women's clothing, even though that we see in the Bible these types of garments were worn by men and by priests. So it just goes to show that it isn't inherently wrong. It's just the kind of clothes that men and women wear, as long as they were appropriate, changed throughout history. If you think about it, in Scotland, some Scots wear kilts. Now, I would not want to tell them that they were very feminine for wearing kilts. I would never say that to their face, especially. In Africa, men also wear dresses, just because that's the culture of what they wear. It's not that they're trying to go against society or anything. It's just how it has progressed over the years. This is just the kind of garments that they typically wear. The third argument, dresses only believers state that there is little to no distinction between men and women's pants. So, if they're saying that there has to be this great divide, this great division between pants and dresses, what kind of differences did biblical people have? So I found this on an article. I have the URL here in my notes if you want to see it afterwards. And the conclusion that I've come to by comparing the clothes that they have is that what they wore was essentially very much the same thing. There are only very small, stylish, and size differences between what they wore. So if you're taking notes, just understand that really the concept here is that there's not a whole lot of difference, because I'm just going to blow through these next three slides. For men, the inner tunic, a long piece of plain cotton or linen cloth as an undergarment for the upper body, but sometimes reaching all the way down to the ankles. It was usually not worn when the weather was very warm. The tunic coat, or ketanet, a shirt-like garment worn over the inner tunic in cool weather, or next to the body without the inner tunic when warm. It usually had long sleeves and extended down to the ankles. The belt, or girdle, made of leather from 2 to 6 inches wide, sometimes with a shoulder strap when heavier articles were being carried with it. The cloak or mantle, a robe worn over all of the other items of clothing as an outer garment for warmth and appearance. The headdress, worn chiefly as a protection against the sun. The Hebrew version could, depending upon circumstances, be a cap, a turban, or a headscarf. Shoes or sandals. Shoes were made from soft leather, sandals from hard leather. For women, the inner tunic, a long garment reaching all the way down to the ankles. It was usually a finer quality cotton, linen, or silk. The outer tunic, a full-length garment, again a finer quality than the men's version, and almost always enhanced with fine needlework and or multicolor threads. The belt or girdle, made of colorful silk or wool, sometimes with a fringe from the waist nearly to the ankles. The cloak, warm and durable for protection against cool weather and usually more intricate. The headdress, a lighter and finer quality than the men's version and always more colorful. Women also usually had elaborate plaiting or other arrangements of their hair, which tended to be long. Shoes or sandals. Shoes were made from soft leather, sandals from harder leather. So as you see, in comparing the types of garments that the men and women wear, they wore almost essentially the same thing, but with the common theme that what the woman wore was usually just a finer quality, or it had these intricate details in them. But if you look at, say, the outer tunic, a full-length garment, again, a finer quality, like I said, in the men's version, almost always enhanced. And then the tunic coat, a shirt-like garment worn over the inner tunic in cool weather and next to the body without the inner tunic when warm, usually had long sleeves and extended down to the ankles. So they wore these same drape long garments. Both men and women wore these same things. And if you look at the definition of the shoes or sandals, it says exactly the same thing. Shoes are made from soft leather, sandals from harder leather. Shoes are made from soft leather, sandals from harder leather. So if women shall not wear what pertains to a man, nor man wear what pertains to a woman, they're wearing the exact same thing. But they say, well, that's on their feet. Where does it specify where it's supposed to be worn? They're wearing the exact same kind of footwear, aren't they? So my second argument under this is that the modern differences between the types of garments that we wear now reflects the same kind of differences that they had back then. They didn't have this drastic valley of pants and dresses. The types of differences that we have now are very similar to the types of differences that they had. We have the same types of clothing garments, men and women, but there are slight differences, usually size and style differences, between the sexes. And then I would also argue that man and woman's pants are different. And now I'm going to tell you a little story of how I know that to be true. We were in a used clothing store, and I was looking for some jeans, and I noticed some, and they looked pretty cool, and the tag from the store said that they were young men's, and it was just my size, so I quickly grabbed them along with a couple of other pairs. And so I went ahead and I put these on, and I knew they were not men's pants. I knew immediately that they were not men's pants. And so that's how you know that there are differences between women's and men's pants. Even though they are the same types of garments, there are size, there are style differences. So they may look kind of similar. In the olden days, I'm sure if they had many, many garments, which they usually didn't, but if they had many, many garments, I'm sure mom would be asking her kids, is this one yours? Is this one yours? I can't remember. As usually goes on, especially in our household. The same word, kapheneth, is used for Adam and Eve's clothes. If there's supposed to be this wide distinction, why did God make the same type of clothes for Adam and Eve? He made for them coats of skin in Genesis 3, verse 21. Also for Adam and his wife, the Lord God made tunics of skin and clothed them. And this tunics of skin in the Hebrew is said as kapheneth. So it's using the exact same word to describe what both Adam and Eve were wearing. Obviously, there must have been some kind of difference between it, but if the Bible doesn't even go as far to differentiate different words for what they were wearing, how can we force upon the idea that what men and women should wear has to be so vastly different as pants and dresses? Now moving on to the fourth argument. They say that the New Testament says that women must wear long dresses. And they turn to that verse in 1 Timothy. What I would argue about is that this verse is not specifically telling women exactly what types of garments, what specific garments they must wear. It is talking about the attitude and what their character must be in deciding what they wear, in what characteristics their garments must be. Once again, let's read this verse just to reiterate that point. I'll read the verse before, starting in 8. I desire, therefore, that the men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. In like manner also, that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair, or gold, or pearls, or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. The focus of the verse is not apparel, but if you look at all of the other words within these three verses, what is it talking about? Well, with the men, it's talking about pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. Both abstracts. And then you look in the next verse, it says, to adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation. Also, both abstracts. It does say, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing. And people who say that women must wear dresses might point to this and say, aha, see, exactly detailed. You must not do this or this or this or this. But I believe what Paul is pointing to here is that he's not saying, don't make a show of yourself. don't try to beat everyone with your braided hair or have the most gold or the pearls and trying to show off. It's your attitude. How are you presenting yourself as a Christian to other people? Are you presenting yourself as someone who is trying to pronounce to the world, look how great I am, look at all the stuff that I have, or someone who is very humble, very lowly, that when they are praying to God, the focus is not on them, the focus is on what they are serving, how they are serving God, but which is proper for women professing godliness and with good works. The focus of this verse is not on the word apparel. It's on the word modest. It's how women are to present themselves, what their heart is to be like when they are presenting themselves before God. Once again, propriety and moderation reflect the attitude of the clothing that you are wearing. The second argument against this is, what does that word catastole really mean? The word that we see that says apparel, in the Greek it says catastole. And they take this word and they say catastole literally means a long flowing garment. Thus, woman must wear a long flowing dress. I would argue that catastole does not say long flowing garments necessarily. They take the two parts of the word kata and stole. Kata, when you combine them, it means a garment let down, is literally what it means. A long flowing garment, a garment let down, they're pretty similar, but they get very specific when they say a long flowing garment into saying a long flowing dress. And that's not exactly what it means. It means a garment let down. Now, why would Paul use this word, a garment let down, in this verse? Is it possibly because he's saying a garment let down? You don't want your body features to be exposed. You want to be very modest. You don't want to be bold and showing off everything. You want to be very humble. I believe that is why he's using this word, a garment let down. Also, this word catastole is only used once in the New Testament. And since it was written in Koine Greek, a very rare form of Greek, this word shows up nowhere else. So the exact meaning, the exact context of this word is technically impossible to know. Of course, you can take those two parts of the word, kata and stole, and come up with what is most likely a very accurate meaning of the word, but you can't definitively say that this is absolutely what it means, because we have nothing else to compare it to. Also, what does our translation say? Does our translation say that women are to adorn themselves in modest, long-flowing dresses? If you look again, it says, women adorn themselves in modest apparel. So why would the people who translated the Bible from Hebrew and Greek into English use the word apparel instead of what we would call long-flowing dress? Again, I believe it's because the stress of the verse is not on the specific garment that you are to wear, but what attitude you are to wear. So it's not right for us to go back and pick out what we think could possibly be the definition and mandate everyone to wear dresses, because that's not what our Bible says. The Bible says that women are to adorn themselves in modest apparel. Very generic word. Also, men did not wear pants in the New Testament times. Men also wore a catastole, a garment let down. They had no such thing as pants. If you look at every painting, every interpretation of what the men wore in the New Testament times, you'll see that they also wore robes. They also wore garment let down. So if this verse is saying the women must wear a long flowing dress, it's not really differentiating between what the men wore, because the men wore the exact same thing in essence. The purpose of this verse is not to create distinction between articles of clothing for men and women. It's again what the heart and what the mindset is supposed to be. So looking at that last verse, what is nakedness? I'd like to, I've basically gone over my arguments of why I believe that we are not mandated to, or why women are not mandated to just wear dresses. But I'm going to go ahead and look at nakedness and modesty and then compare dresses and pants and see how they fit in with the Bible's description. So let's look at what is nakedness. Again, let's go back to Exodus 28, verse 42 and 43. And you shall make for them linen trousers to cover their nakedness. They shall reach from the waist to the thighs. And we don't have to read the second verse. That was once again saying that it shall be on Aaron and his sons and forevermore, as long as they're priests. So we see that the definition here in the Bible of nakedness is from the waist to the thighs. Isaiah 47, verse 2 and 3. Take the millstones and grind meal. Remove your veil. Take off the skirt. Uncover the thigh. Pass through the rivers. Your nakedness shall be uncovered. Yes, your shame will be seen. I will take vengeance, and I will not arbitrate with a man. So he says to take off your skirt. Uncover the thigh. This would be the definition of nakedness. So we see that for the Bible, if your thigh is revealing or your waist is revealing, God calls this nakedness, and this is shameful to do. So, what is modest as defined by the dictionary? It says modesty is restrained by sense of propriety, not forward or bold, not lewd. And the word propriety basically means what is proper, what is appropriate for the time and place. So, let's compare the modesty between dresses and pants. Some dresses, if you haven't noticed, can be very bold. They bring attention to the body features. They hug the form. They don't cover the thighs. Some of them are they are cut very short. And some of them can be very low cut. They don't come up to the neck. They reveal almost as much as they can. Pants can also be very immodest. They can sit very low on the waist. They are form-fitting. You've heard of skinny jeans. They suck tight to the pants as much as they can. Some people call them painted-on jeans. I would agree with that. Some are torn across the legs. They're just torn all over the place. They're drawing attention to themselves. They're saying, look at me, look at the legs, look at these pants. Look at the tears across them. Look how tight they are. Some dresses can be very modest. They cover the legs. They go all the way down to the shins or the ankles even. They don't expose the body features. They're very loose and let down. They're not hugging the form. They come up to the neck. They're not very low cut. Many dresses are very, very modest. Pants also cover the definition of modesty in the Bible. First of all, basically all pants cover the legs and the thighs, except, of course, if they're torn all across the legs and thighs, which makes absolutely no sense. They can be very modest. They are not necessarily form-fitting. They can also be looser. And they're not drawing attention to themselves. They are simply there. They're there to cover up the nakedness of a woman or a man. So as we can see, both dresses and pants can either fit or not fit the definition of modesty as defined by the Bible. So in conclusion, I would say from looking at the Bible in the absolute truest context and seeing what Paul and what Moses or what God is saying through the Mosaic Law, I don't believe he's specifying that women must only wear long flowing garment, catastole, all the time. I believe what it's saying that a woman's heart should always be not that of trying to reveal herself and put herself out there, but that she should be modest. The same goes for men. It says, man shall not wear what pertains to a woman. And if we are to hold ourselves to that, men must not wear skirts. And why is this? Well, we would say that men definitely wore skirts in this society, whereas women don't necessarily stand out as much as they wear pants, because society, most women wear pants, and not many men wear skirts. But if you go to Scotland, for instance, where they wear kilts every once in a while, it's not an extremely odd thing. It might be kind of odd for us, because we're not used to it. But are they inherently wrong in what they're doing? No. It's just the culture that they have grown up in doing. Deuteronomy 22, I don't believe, is binding to us anymore, because it's right in the middle of all those other ceremonial Mosaic laws. I don't believe the word abomination necessarily applies to us today, because we don't see this command again repeated by Jesus or by Paul or by any of the other apostles in the New Testament. And then in 1 Timothy, we see that women are to adorn themselves in modest apparel, in modest clothing. So my personal opinion is that based upon the Bible, I don't believe it is saying that. It is completely up to you how you will interpret this. The reason I taught on this was, one, yes, because I had been studying it over the last month and a half or so. Also, I couldn't recall hearing a lesson on this before, and I just wanted to enlighten everyone on the topic, get you thinking a little bit about this. I believe it is wise to have an opinion that is everything that is said about in the Bible, and I think it's good to be learning more and more new things about God's Word each day. Having said this, if you're not a Christian, you might be wondering, why in the world are they going to all this extent to look at this little itty-bitty thing and come up with some definite opinion about what the Bible is saying about this? Isn't this so inconsistent? Isn't this so minuscule? It really doesn't matter. But as Christians, we're trying to correct ourselves. We're trying to learn more about God.